Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, right here on The Mark Steiner Show, on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we are about to take a look at what is happening in Palestine and Israel. And the clash is taking place. We are looking at it as the third intifada, things are different than they were in the past, because much of this is violence that has been perpetrated by both Israeli settlers and Palestinians, young Palestinians, people being stabbed and killed. Police have shot people outright, Israeli police, that is. And we have brought two folks to the panel here to wrestle with that. We want you to call in with your comments at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, comment on our Facebook pages, or send us an email, as I said, to talkatsteinershow.org. But do call at 410-319-8888. We are joined by Dr. Ali Zaghib, who's a Palestinian-born businessman, political observer, who has a place in Palestine, goes back there frequently, just came back, as a matter of fact, and has been a guest on the show talking about these issues since 1993. It's good to see you again, Ali. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mark, for inviting me again.
Alan Elsner joins us by phone from Israel. He's Vice President of Communications for J Street. Alan, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
410-319-8888 is the number here, so please join us. 410-319-8888. I posited to Ali, and I'll let you start, Alan, before we went on the show. We've been deeply involved in this for the entire
20 years, I guess.
20 years in the program or more, and my entire life. So it just feels, given the power of the kind of government in Israel now, which is right-wing government, nationalistic, many religious zealots in the government as well, that looking at the settlements in the West Bank, the fact that 20-25% of the Israeli population is Israeli proper or Palestinians living in Israel proper, then when you look at what's falling apart here and how it seems to be falling apart, and both Abbas and Netanyahu are unable to answer anything that has to do with reality, have we reached the point where a serious two-state solution is beyond us? And part of the chaos we're seeing is that reality people don't want to accept.
I don't know exactly how to answer that, because it's one of these questions, is global warming irreversible? At what point, does the warming of the Earth mean X, Y, and Z? This is a process. I don't know if there's a point when the line is crossed. But what I get back to is that I just don't see any other solution. And the two-state solution certainly seems very distant right now. As you pointed out, you have two leaders who don't have the political courage or the political will to make the concessions that would be necessary. But a one-state solution, either kind of that posed by the left, of everyone living happily in this multinational democracy, is just entirely unrealistic. I mean, if you look around the world, the trend seems to be for countries to divide. Even
right.
Britain, where I come from, is a Scottish independence movement. Belgium, the French and the Walloons don't want to, and the Dutch don't want to be together anymore. Slovakia and the Czech Republic are divided. And so, the idea that the Israeli Jews and Palestinians will be able to live harmoniously in one state when what both of them want is to have their own state is just, to me, unrealistic. So I think that the job of people in my organization and other people of goodwill is to keep the idea somehow alive until the political circumstances change and until you have the kind of leaders who are willing to take the political risks and have the political courage to make it happen. Because the alternative is just too horrible to contemplate. And I'm just not willing to do that right now. It's just to give in to hopelessness. And it's easy, to analyze the situation coldly from a studio in Baltimore. But we are talking about real people on both sides of the divide, with real lives, with children, with hopes, with aspirations. So somebody has to keep the hope alive.
Ali.
I do agree with you. For one very important reason, there is no other alternative to the two-state solution. And unfortunately, as you said, I think the belligerence of Netanyahu or the hostility of Netanyahu and his government, and I'm going to say the ineptness of Mahmoud Abbas, our president, you know, or the Palestinian president, his ineptness and his inability to really even move things forward are the major obstacles right now. But these things do change. I do believe that the majority of the Israelis, when they come back to their senses, they want a two-state solution. And I know for a fact the majority of the Palestinians want a two-state solution. And I think we missed a lot of good work here under Obama and John Kerry. I do believe they are both very sincere and very honorable people, and they tried their best, but unfortunately there was not that good of a reception, neither by Netanyahu nor by Abbas for that matter, and that is why we feel stuck at this point. But I do believe that the future will be a two-state solution.
But the question is, given where things are on all both fronts, perhaps three fronts, when you look at the split in Palestine between what was used to be called the West Bank and to Gaza Strip, and Israel proper, which is expanding, that the especially the political and especially religious extremists on both sides are gaining more and more power. You look at a quote that was in this morning. I was reading a piece in the NBC News put out, and they covered. What an Israeli settler had said, which was basically saying, we are looking at this, it's going to be like this till the Messiah comes, that and every bullet has a name on it for a reason. We are here to make this fight. That intransience is taking place at the moment. The fact that articles were written, and Alan, in the piece which is sent to me by other friends in Israel, there was a piece about how now, for the first time in Israel's history, the intelligence arms of the Israeli government are being run by people who are super religious and on the right. I'm saying that's why I guess I posited the question I did, not to be pessimistic, but having covered this and lived through it for so long myself, my entire life, that it's hard to see where we go from this place.
Well, you know, things happen for your entire life. You know, I grew up in the Cold War for my entire life until the Cold War ended. So I've been around this issue and this conflict for a long time. I guess I was 13 in 1967 when the Six-Day War happened, and in 1973 I was in college and I volunteered. So, you know, I've seen a lot of changes. Sometimes there have been good moments, and more often there have been wars and bloodshed and bad moments. But things don't change, don't stay the same. Conflicts don't last forever. There isn't a conflict in human history that's lasted forever. You know, Athens and Sparta are not fighting the Peloponnesian War anymore. You know, this conflict, too, will change. I can't tell you when, and we are definitely at a low ebb. And I do want to say that I agreed with everything that my friend said just before. I totally endorse every word that he said. Yes, there are racist, there are intolerant voices in Israel, no question about it. And then on the Palestinian side, there are the Islamic voices of Hamas and Islamic Jihad and others. And these extremists on both sides are trying to exploit the situation because both of them feel that the violence advances their agendas. And in the region, there are a lot of horrible forces, ISIS and Al-Qaeda and this, that, and the other, and then Syrian tragedy. And it's very hard to see a way out of this situation right now. It's terribly, terribly tragic. And then to see young kids decide to stab civilians and lose their own lives in the process is just awful. But I guess you have the luxury, Mark, of taking the stance of being an analyst, and I don't feel like I have that luxury. I'm just too much in it. I know too many of the people on both sides. I care about it too much, so I'm not quitting.
No, I wouldn't say, go ahead, Ali.
Neither am I, by the way. I just came back from Palestine, Israel, and I've been there four times this summer, in fact, since June. And I see the faces of the Palestinian mothers when their kids go to jail. I'm sure the Israeli mothers, when their kids get killed or stabbed or whatever it is, I'm sure it is the same feeling. And I think we all have to come and share that narrative, that Palestinian men, women, and children are worth Israeli men, women, and children, and vice versa. I think the historical narrative has been a little bit eschewed or changed under the occupation. The occupation is a miserable, miserable thing. And I think until the Israelis really come to the point where they have to end the occupation of the West Bank, and there was a time when we almost got there, you know, until Yigal Amir killed Rabin. I do believe that we're going to have leaders like Rabin and Arafat who are courageous enough to make important decisions, and hopefully they will live. Hopefully they will not get killed before they finish the job. So I am not nearly as pessimistic or whatever the word is. I do believe that we will be moving forward. It's going to take time. It's going to take maybe one or two elections in Israel. It's going to take a new election maybe in the West Bank, where we have an able leader who is willing to negotiate, who is willing to argue, who is willing to move forward with the peace process. So I do think that things will move forward.
So, and I don't mean to sound like a cold, hard-bitten analyst. It's far from who I am, Alan. But
no, you are not. We know you are not.
But I do that to stand back a minute here, because the passions are deep about where this is going, and the question is, and I really want to hear from both of you, where you think this might, what might be the next steps in the next months coming up, when you see what's happening at the moment. I mean that the continued occupation, the power of that occupation, the violence of that occupation, all that's just happened in the last 2 weeks. So I'm curious where you see, Alan. You're in the middle of it on the Israeli side. Where do you see it going?
It's very hard to predict. I mean, what makes this very difficult right now is that, of course, there is incitement, you know, on both sides, but the acts of violence seem to be kind of spontaneous and unplanned, and they're not orchestrated by any terrorist group. They're just people who get up out of bed one morning and decide that they just can't, you know, stand it anymore, and then they do something terrible like this. And so it's really hard, you know, to predict. Makes it very, very hard to defend against as well, because you just don't know. You can be walking down the street and all of a sudden somebody pulls out a knife. And it's, you know, I think significant that most of these attacks have been knife attacks, and they haven't been suicide bombings, they haven't been car bombings, although there was one attempt to blow up a car yesterday. But I think, you know, the big unknown is Hamas going to get involved from Gaza? Are we going to have another round of that? I mean, people say they're not ready for it yet. It was only last summer that we had a horrible, tragic 50-day war. So that's unpredictable. And, of course, all it takes is one really – some of these attacks have been really kind of small scale right now. It's just one major attack or one major massacre or, you know, violence that really gets out of hand and causes mass casualties can change the political calculus. Right now, I have the sense that both Netanyahu and Abbas belatedly are trying to restrain the extremists, each one on their own side. But so I don't know if we are in another intifada or not. I think it's too soon to say. What I do know is that this just shows that the status quo is completely untenable. The Obama administration, unfortunately, seems to have walked away from the situation, washed its hands on the situation. I do understand that it's been busy with the Iran agreement, and there are other things in the world going on, and the Syrian refugees, and this, that, and the other. But I think that some decisive American diplomacy is really required now to give the Palestinians a sense of hope and a sense that their occupation will not last forever. And what I would like to see them do is put forward a detailed plan with detailed parameters, make it public, for solving this crisis, even if it's a legacy to be left to the next administration, to put something on the record that draws a border, that makes it clear which settlements have to be evacuated, that puts forward the security arrangements to protect the Israeli eastern border, although that put forward a plan for Jerusalem that can make it a Palestinian capital as well as the capital of Israel. They have the plan. It's there in the vaults of the State Department or in the National Security Council or somewhere. They need to get the courage and the guts up to put it on the table, and maybe also to pass a UN resolution, which will be a binding resolution, and to mobilize the entire international community around this plan. And I think that might break the logjam and give the Palestinians a sense that the world has not forgotten about them.
And Ali, I mean, what we're seeing here, I mean, among Palestinians now, I mean, when I proffered this, the idea about are we going past a two-state solution, I partially did that because it's been written about so much, and there are many young Palestinian activists now who have no hope in Fatah or Hamas that we have spoken to, and they say they want a one-state solution. That's part of it. And so what do we say to them, and what do you say to the young people in the street being led, and maybe it's by women, right, the young women who have been at the forefront of what's happening in these streets now. There's kind of an organic uprising that has nothing to do with the older leadership. So that's why I'm saying something is afoot.
You know, absolutely.
Different.
You know, the frustration in the Palestinian territories and the West Bank. I'm not familiar with Gaza, so I'm not going to speak about that. Frustration is so high. And I think if you look at all this in the past 2 months, really it started with the Israeli settlers torching the house in Douma, you know, killing the wife, the husband, and the two children. And that kind of started the fire boiling inside some Palestinian heads, especially the young generation, as you said. This is not organized by Fatah or Hamas, for that matter. And that is good. It is not organized by the leadership. So these are all, I would say, individual actions. Unfortunately, the end result of these individual actions are not, you know, I'm not downgrading the importance of these actions, but I don't think they're going to be widespread. From my talks with Palestinians when I was there and after I got back last week, nobody wants an intifada. Nobody wants a third intifada. The Palestinian people want food on their tables. They want to be able to go to their cities and villages and move their produce and their merchandise from point A to point B without settlers and without Israeli military stopping them for hours and hours at checkpoint. And I do believe that the Israeli leadership also, even Netanyahu, and I really have nothing good to say about Netanyahu, but when the family was torched in Douma, the Palestinian family, Netanyahu went to the hospital to visit the Palestinian family. That was a great gesture. I applauded that gesture. And I do believe that even Netanyahu and the Israeli leadership at this point do not want an intifada.
They might. I don't think anybody. I think most of that leadership does not want an intifada. That's clear on both sides of the fence. And you can see it by the hedging around that Abbas is doing in his public statements, Mahmoud Abbas. But this is also, you know, I mentioned the occupation, but it's also beyond the borders. I mean, an email exchange I had last night with a young woman in Israel, who's Palestinian, is Arab, was talking about that the eruptions are taking place all through Arab communities inside of Israel. So it's not just about the borders of 67. There's something else being fueled, especially by young Palestinians, on both sides. What were we going to say, Alan?
No, I mean, I agree that sentiment is running high amongst Arab Israelis or Palestinian Israelis, but I haven't seen a tremendous amount of, you know, there may be a strike here or there. I don't think we're going to see violence in Nazareth and Akko and Umm Fakhan. And I do agree that it depends how you define intifada. I mean, we've had two intifadas. They were very different from one another. What we have now is we've had a couple of weeks of sporadic but horrific acts of deadly violence. And so is this a third intifada that will be different from the last two? I don't know. I mean, it could die down in a week or two. It's really impossible to predict. The key question for me is, is anyone, if it does die down, are the leaders on both sides going to say, okay, that's over, now we can just go back to the status quo, now we can go back to normal, and the United States can say, well, that's over. We've got other things to deal with that we can forget about it and put it on the back burner. And I think that would be the most tragic mistake, because that's just, you know, preparing the way for the next outbreak of violence. It's not a solution, and there needs to be a solution, and there needs to be. And I totally agree that Palestinians are looking at a hopeless situation, and there needs to be a way of giving them hope, not just hope, but an independent state, which is what they deserve and which justice demands, and which Israel needs as well to preserve its democracy and to preserve its role as a homeland for the Jewish people.
So let me get a quick call in here, and I'll close out with kind of closing thoughts from both of Ali Zagheb and Alan Elsner. 410-319-8888. Jay, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, good morning.
Just a brief comment. When we talk about what's going on now, and I think one of the things that no one has talked about, either yourself or your guests, is the fact that what's going on now is not just organic, not something that's just not being unorganized behavior. There's been tremendous excitement going on for the past several months involving the status of Jerusalem and false claims that Israel is trying to take over the Temple Mount area. There's a battle for that area now going on. These are false claims. Israel has protected the rights of Muslims on the Temple Mount since 1967. There are Jewish groups that have gone up there attempting to pray there. But they have been resisted by Israeli police forces as well. So there's been tremendous religious excitement within the Islamic community of Israel and in the West Bank. These false claims of Israel trying to take over that area, which has incited many people individually to engage in acts of violence, particularly on the Arab side. And that's something that needs to be recognized when we try to understand what's going on the past several weeks. That's my comment.
Thanks,
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Jay. But I also say there's been, if you can look at it that way, there's also been huge incitement from right-wing religious zealots in Israel who are also pushing to take over the mount and are pushing to do these things.
Yeah, Jay, there are Israeli extremists who are pushing to take over. And if you talk about violence, really, let's not forget what I call state violence. If you look at what happened in the past even 2 months, there are more Palestinians who were killed and injured than Israelis. State violence, sometimes we do not count it as violence. When the Israeli soldiers shoot Palestinians and kill 6 of them at one juncture, that is violence also, and that is killing innocent people. So it's really from both sides. I cannot blame the Islamic extremists and, you know, forgive the Israeli extremists.
Final quick thoughts from both Alan Elsner and, because we had to go break our break here.
Just to respond to that point, I do think that there has been a tremendous amount of incitement around the Temple Mount. I think Abbas added to it with a very unhelpful speech at the UN, you know, the Palestinians have a tremendous amount to be justifiably complain about, but I don't think the Temple Mount is high on the list of their complaints. And the Temple Mount, I think, is the most incendiary issue of all. So I think that the incitement that's been whipped up around the Temple Mount has a large part in what's been happening. I think that, you know, counting casualties is not a useful way to go. I think that now the onus is on all of us to take responsible positions and try and calm the situation and prevent it from falling into the hands of the extremists on both sides. And I'm glad that Netanyahu and Abbas, and I think that they came to this rather late, but better late than never, are trying to do that. But then, having gotten past this particular spasm of horrific violence, I think it's incumbent on the Obama administration to come forward with a proper plan and break the political logjam.
I totally agree with you about the Obama administration. It is about time to really sit down and, you know, dot our I's and cross our T's. There's got to be some decisive action taken by the U.S., and once the U.S. does that, I'm sure the European Union will follow suit and the United Nations will follow suit. So right now, honestly, truly, the best way to handle this is for the Obama administration and John Kerry to do something decisive and extremely clear And as you said about the three settlements that were agreed to, basically, Arayel, Ma'ale Adumim, and I think Kiryat Atzion, I think everybody knows, even in the Palestinian community, these will remain Israeli land, you know, with Israelis in them, and the Palestinians will get some land from Israel, basically connecting Gaza and the West Bank. That was the plan earlier, and I hope we will finalize it soon.
I want to thank you both. Dr. Ali Zagheb, a Palestinian-born businessman and activist, political observer, been a guest on the show for the last 23 years talking about these issues. Alan Elsner, who joins us from Israel, Vice President of Communications for J Street. Alan, Ali, thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
And thank you, Alan.
Thank Ali for a very constructive conversation.
Thank you, Alan. When you come to D.C., we'll have lunch, okay, with Ziad Asali.
Okay, great.
Okay, man. Thank you.
Bye-bye. On our way to break, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. We'll take a very brief break. When we return, we'll talk about Indigenous Peoples Day with Joshie Ross, who also spoke this Saturday at 10:15.